This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Everybody not made for the playoffs, and I don't know if y'all can see that around the league, but you look around the league, everybody just not cut out for the playoffs. And, you know, GP is showing that with his toughness and, you know, with the mindset that he has, you know, you come out and you do what you do. But, you know, you got to give credit to guys who show up in the playoffs, because it's just not a normal thing around this league. You look around and some guys that you think are guys are not guys in the playoffs, and that's just what it is.
It's pretty simple as that. They just hit shots when they needed to hit them.
Four shots for you. Just what did you see out there, and why was it so hard for you to get involved? What's going to be the key for you guys to make sure that this a loss like this?
Yeah. Staying together, you know, this is a tough one. It's really tough. And you got to regroup and get ready. Go home, drink some wine. Move on to the next day. I mean, that's really simple. You know, just decompress. Decompress. I'm doing it right now while we're talking. So just go home. Remember what God is here. Remember, for me at least, I'm talking for myself, but, you know, remember what got me here, what got us here, you know, our support systems, our work, and each other. And we just got to lean on that. We got to lean on that.
You have to decide if you want to be a wolf or a sheep. Get your ink or go give him a hand. Okay, like, honestly, I'm going to take you back 20 years, man, because I've been processing this since last night, as we all have, okay? All right. How the hell you lose two 25-point leads in the same damn game at the crib? Let's get that out the way. But
wow.
I want to go back to coming up on 20 years ago, May 25th, 2002. Does that date ring a bell, Michael? May 25th, 2002.
Oh, I know what it was. May 25th, 2002. Was that Celtics Nets? At the Garden, 21-point lead.
Game three, 26-point lead.
Celtics.
I was there. I was sitting courtside under the basket. I watched the biggest comeback in NBA history unfold before my eyes at TD Garden.
Yep.
The Celtics over Jason Kidd and Richard Jefferson's New Jersey Nets.
New Jersey.
In game three. And you know what?
Shout out Secaucus.
But you know what every writer said the next day? There's no coming back from that. It's over. They took their heart. They took their soul. That's a wrap.
I wrote it.
And lo and behold.
I wrote it. Yep.
Lo and behold, the Nets won the series. Now, I say that to say this. Mm. I believe I know how this movie ends. It's just a matter of win, and it's a matter of what the Wolves do between now and what I believe is the inevitable, and that is the Grizzlies, the better team, winning this series. I said after game two that I felt like order had been restored. That was chaos last night. The Grizzlies came out victorious, but I think the Grizzlies win this series. But in the meantime, in between time, I'm gonna go to Birdman on you here.
All right, now come on now.
The Wolves are done, but they're not finished.
Okay.
All right? And what I mean by that is, that's why I started off with Training Day. It's like, oh, you want to be a wolf or a sheep? Carl Anthony Towns, you want to be an alley cat or you want to be a kitten? Does Cat want to be a kitten? Do you want to have this self-fulfilling prophecy continue to manifest itself the rest of this series? Because it's like, we think that Carl Anthony Towns has no heart. We think that the Timberwolves don't have what it takes in here and up here.
I don't think that. I don't think that.
To be a threat. Some people think it. A lot of people say it though. Yeah, a lot of people think it. A lot of people think they know it.
Right.
Now is when we find out. See, if I'm Chris Finch, if I'm the head coach, I'm playing all the comments. I'm playing game three of the 2002 Eastern Conference playoffs between Celtics and Nets and saying, this, remember this, and it turned out where the team that blew that lead won the series.
Okay.
I'm playing that. Okay. I'm playing film from last night. And I'm saying, hey, it's real hard to blow two 25-point leads in one game. It's real hard to build two 25-point leads in one game. They did a lot of things right last night. That's what I'm telling the team if I'm Chris Finch today. Yeah. And I'm playing all the commentary about how dumb we are, how immature we are. The Timberwolves are a laughingstock for a different reason today than they have been throughout most of their recent history. So what are they going to do about it is the question.
Yeah.
Because we think they're not built for the playoffs, as Draymond Green was subtly but not so subtly kind of sub-tweeting in his press conference. But we're going to find out for sure in game four based on their response. So I think the Grizzlies still win this series. What I'm looking for is, do the Timberwolves, remember we talked about when they had that excessive celebration when they clinched the playoffs, and I said they're celebrating the beginning of something, not the culmination of something. This ain't about necessarily this series, which is still in the balance. This is about who do you want to be as a franchise? Who do you want to be as a franchise player, Karl Anthony Towns? What do you want to be known as, Anthony Edwards? Patrick Beverly, you just want to be some clown that has the nerve to say Ja Morant is too small, even when you get your shot blocked? Or do you actually want to be a part of this franchise taking a step forward this year and moving forward? So I'm not necessarily suggesting that the Timberwolves are everything people said they were last night on TV and on Twitter and what they've been saying today, but we're going to find out if it's true or not. What do you want to be? A wolf?
This is so good.
Or sheep?
This is really good. For so many reasons. One, let's start with the sound from Draymond. I love when guys talk like this because I agree with it. The playoffs are different. They should be different. The officials call the game differently. The fans are into it. The players are into it. And you know, some guys rise. They have a knack for rising in the playoffs. And some guys play smaller. Some guys are just small. Some guys play smaller. Some guys are just small in the playoffs. Just the way it goes. Brad Stevens, because you mentioned the Celtics example. Brad Stevens said something on Boston radio yesterday. He said, hey guys, talking to the host. I know we're up 2-0 on Brooklyn, but game three is the game in the series, especially when you got game three on the road, where you find out who you are. He said, so I want to see if we can go in there and compete and get and scratch and get a win. You know, he's confident in his team, but hey, let's not start celebrating after two games because it's the dynamics of a series. Which leads me, I'm going to stay in Boston. Your example from Nets Celtics 2000, you said 2002, May 25th, 2002.
2002, almost 20 years ago.
All right.
We're getting old.
All right. So, if Chris Finch, if he's going to come up with those examples of, hey, let me just show you this tape. In the pre-high-def era, I'm going to show you the Celtics coming back from a 21-point deficit in the second half to the New Jersey Nets. And Paul Pierce standing on the table after the game. Standing on the table. It was only game three. They won game three. They went up 2-1. He's standing on the table. If you're going to do that, he should know his history. And I just heard this the other day. I wish I had known this years ago. This would have been better. But I just found it out. Maybe, Mike, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Once a reporter, always a reporter. Yeah. You always report. And you're always finding out stuff from what you thought you knew. So one of the players on the New Jersey Nets from 2002, Brian Scalabrine, told me this story. He said all year long, I said, what happened?
He was on that Nets team?
He was.
I remember that.
He was.
That's crazy. That's how
he was. Scal was on that team. Richard Jefferson, Kenyon Martin, Kidd. Obviously, Jay Kidd's the star.
Yeah.
What's the man's name from Villanova? Kerry Kittles. Kerry Kittles is there.
Kerry Kittles, New Orleans.
Keith Van Horn. A good team. Keith Van Horn had a good team.
Yeah, it was a really good team. That's the one that went to the finals. Yeah.
Went to the finals twice. Went to the finals twice.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I said, man, what, you know, Paul Pierce used to kill y'all. He said, man, you know what it was? He said, Byron Scott, every time Paul Pierce would kill us, Byron Scott would come in and be like, hey, look, fellas, we ain't doubling Paul Pierce. He's like, I played against Michael Jordan. We ain't double Michael Jordan. We ain't doubling. We're going to double Paul Pierce. We ain't double Michael Jordan. Paul Pierce, kill him again. Hey, fellas, we ain't doubling Paul Pierce. After that game three, the fellas, gather around. We're going to double Paul Pierce. We're going to double Paul Pierce.
Right.
We're going to double him. My bad. I got it wrong. We doubling him. They threw zones at him. So it was, yeah, it was rah-rah, but it was a technical adjustment. So can the coaching staff for the Minnesota Timberwolves, yeah, you're going to want to say, oh, all these people are saying this stuff about you. Great. Hey, look what they said on ESPN. Look what they said on Peacock. Look what Michael Holly said. Look what Michael Smith said. Great. That's nice. But what are you going to do, coach, to change some of the dynamics of it? Because it ain't just what people are saying. It's what y'all doing. Like, it's no excuse. Ain't no excuse. Mike, you said it in your feed,
you think
and
it's
you're
coaching?
Right.
You think it's coaching?
It's part of it. It's part of it. It's not all of it. It's all.
I mean, not calling the timeout during a 21-0 run. Not covering.
It could be
that's coaching for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not saying
to
it's
me.
Like,
to me, it's Cat. To me, it's Cat.
Yeah.
I think
okay.
It starts
well,
with
him too.
I mean,
well,
I think
go
it's on
him.
Him primarily. With all due respect to Anthony Edwards, who very well could argue is or shortly will be the face of that franchise. You can't have as the greatest shooting big man of all time. You can't have back-to-back games where you got more fouls than field goal attempts.
That's terrible. Okay,
again,
that's terrible.
But they can't be doing that much wrong to have had two 25-point leads in the same game, and they've already beaten the Grizzlies in Memphis. So I don't know that this is necessarily okay. X's and O's as much as it is the Billies and Joes, specifically Karl-Anthony Towns.
Right. Well, that's part of it. But what I'm fighting with is your use of the word primarily. Primarily Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, look. So they go up early in the first quarter. They have a bad second quarter. So their big lead is shrunk to 7 at halftime. But then in the third quarter, they go on a run again, and they build it back up, and they lose it again. So, some of that is Karl-Anthony Towns and his shooting. But what's going on with everybody else? I can't put that on him. This game.
No, it's not solely on him.
Was a win. This is a win. You gotta have this one. I don't care if you blow.
Yeah.
If you blow the first lead, and then it gets a little it gets a little rocky, turns into an ugly game. You win it by 5. Okay, fine. You can't blow 2 leads and then lose it. You have a 12-point fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now that they did,
and a lot of other people.
But now that they did, it's just a matter of, are you gonna go out like some suckers? Are you gonna go out like punks? Are you going to be what everybody says you are? And this is the cool part about it. If you're Minnesota, it's like the choice is yours. Choice is yours. The series ain't over if you're Minnesota.
Is it choice theirs? Is it choice theirs in what sense? Or how they're going to approach it or what the result's going to be? How they're going to approach it?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, and technically it's both. I believe that Minnesota ultimately wins. Excuse me, that Memphis ultimately wins
Memphis
this series.
Wins it.
It's what I saw 7. Coming in. It's 2-1 now. That's what you have? You have Memphis in 7.
Memphis in 7. Tough series.
Okay, let's play that out. So you still see this as a 7-game series. So for all the reasons that you said before last night, right? Two teams that haven't really done anything in the playoffs, young teams, inexperienced. Right. Okay, that's great.
And
if Minnesota pushes this to a 7-game series, in my mind, that is a win for them. Win or lose. What I mean by that is right
just
now, they're being written off.
To be able
to
overcome this. Yeah.
Right now, Minnesota's being written off. To me, this is bigger than just the first round of these playoffs. You have a young team that's gone where very few Timberwolves teams have gone in recent memory, which is why they stood on the table and celebrated and went crazy and partied like it was 1999 when they clinched a playoff berth. That's why.
Right.
So, here and now, this is when you decide what you want your legacy and your reputation to be, so that the people like Draymond Green aren't talking about you when they say the playoffs ain't for everybody. Yeah. So problems are just opportunities that haven't presented themselves yet. So if I'm Minnesota, I'm looking at this as an opportunity to push back against the narrative of what we are and what we aren't, specifically Karl Anthony Towns. So I'm more curious than I am concerned about Minnesota.
Play your game. Play your game. You got the talent. You've got the talent to do it. You've got a good matchup. This is a good matchup in a series. It's not like Memphis.
They're not running away with it.
So they can't play with them.
They're not running them off the court.
They represented the Twin Cities and Prince, your 1999 reference. They represented the Twin Cities well on the night of the play-in. The way they played that game, the way they celebrated that game. But on the anniversary, when there was a great celebration at Paisley Park, right up the street from where they were playing yesterday, I guess it was a great scene. There were 199 Prince fans from around the world, because that facility wouldn't allow more than 200. So they had 199 Prince fans celebrating the life, the legacy, the music, the unpredictability, the genius of Prince Rogers Nelson. And right down the street, these fools are blowing 220 plus point leads. That's a shame. Basketball playing Prince, basketball fan Prince would be very disappointed. But they got an opportunity in Minnesota for game four.
That's what I'm saying. They could make this a series. Again, forget what I think, which is that Minnesota's going to win it. Maybe it's a Freudian slip.
But see,
Memphis is Freudian. going to win it. Ooh. Oh, man. I've done that twice.
No.
I think Memphis is going to win the series.
What kind of series?
You have Memphis in seven.
You think this is a close series, or you think this really they did take
all
their
right.
heart.
Okay.
And it's over. It's over in five.
Setting aside my pep rally, my halftime, my locker room speech to the Timberwolves, setting that aside. Grizzlies in six. Grizzlies in six.
Right.
Like I think the Timberwolves, even the series. I really do think, listen, man, I don't want to believe that Karl Anthony Towns, or the Timberwolves for that matter, are what people say they are, or are what people think they are. I want to believe I want to believe that he's got more to him than what we've seen these last two games in particular. I want to believe that about him. Until proved otherwise. So I'm going to give the Wolves, I think they get up and they punch back in game four and even this series. Then I think Memphis goes up, and then Memphis closes it out at the Target Center. But at least, if nothing else, win some respect. Like, look, man, if I'm a lose a fight, I'm going to get some licks in. You're going to know you've been in a fight.
Okay.
You know, the question
is, I'm just
hoping that the Timberwolves don't just roll over and everything about, they took their heart, they took their soul.
Right, right.
You know, I just hope that's not the case for them, for their sake.
Here's something to look out for, though. Here's something to look out for. I know Minnesota is, get those jokes off, get those memes off on the Timberwolves, but keep in mind, the other side celebrating and Ja tweeting still ain't won a series. So they may be celebrating a little bit too much. Y'all ain't won a series. You never won a series. So Minnesota doesn't have to earn your respect. You have to earn their respect too. You're both in the same category. Karl Anthony Towns never won a series, neither is Ja Morant. So let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
And everybody's just going to compare it to what it was at home and how lethal it was. But you understand, the playoffs, every game is a little bit different, especially when you go on the road. It's just, can you, find a way to just make enough plays and just win the game? Like, at the end of the day, it doesn't have to be perfect or pretty. You just got to compete, and that's what we did.
Do you believe it now, Trinity? the other day, okay, you were like, oh, the Warriors, it's just Denver. Oh, it's just Denver. I was like, man. Jordan Poole's a star. A star. I was like, oh, okay, fine.
Remix. The dub remix. Ooh.
So.
It's dope.
I mean, you're coming around to see it in my way. I can't sing that. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was watching it last night. You know, I was doing something else. Corner of the eye. You know, you always see something out of the corner. Now, if you raise, you know, never mind. I won't get into that. But anyway, I saw something out of the corner. I was like, yo, did I just see somebody shoot from the logo? Did I just see somebody shoot from the logo and make it? Jordan Poole and one of the producers at NBC Boston reminded me that Jordan Poole was a guy in Michigan. Remember, there was a like Sweet 16, got him into the Sweet 16, hit a shot from the logo or something. Buzzer beater in the NCAA tournament. Like, he's just, this is what he does. It's crazy what they have going here with all three of y'all. All three of them. Jordan, Curry, and Klay. They look great. They're impressive. They're a contender. They're going to be in the Western Conference Finals. However,
Against who? Is the question.
I didn't even look at the thing. We got the bracket. We got the Western Conference bracket, because if they're going to be in the Western Conference Finals, like what'd they wind up?
So they would get Memphis in the second seed? Round. No, Golden State's three.
What were they?
So they would get, like, if three, things okay, hold, yeah. They would get Memphis in the next round.
Okay.
If Memphis were
okay,
to be
Okay, I'm comfortable saying, okay.
Wow.
Good. They'll be in the conference
Phoenix
finals.
Or New Orleans
Stop
would
it.
Play Dallas. We'll play Dallas. We'll get to Utah in a second. We won't spend too much time
All
on
right.
Utah because
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not working.
No, look. I'm gonna roll with the Suns. I know what Devin Booker's issues are. New Orleans will play competitive games down the stretch. They'll play the rest of the series, they'll play competitive games. They will not win another game.
Okay.
New Orleans is done winning.
Okay. I remember you said that. But going back to Golden State.
I don't think you can just keep dismissing this
as Denver. Denver's shorthanded.
I know, I didn't.
To me, this is not.
I didn't. It's impressive. It's impressive.
Okay, so whom it may concern then? This is not an indictment of Nikola Jokic. If anything, this validates Nikola Jokic's status as most valuable player, given that he dragged this team to this point. Okay? Denver is overmatched.
What do you have, like 30? What do you have, like 37 and 18 last night? He had 37
it was something ridiculous.
18,
yeah. Something
yeah,
ridiculous.
I mean, come on.
37 and 18, five assists.
Let's not get into, I'm going to use a word. It's a provocative word. Let's not get into lazy, like, umbrella statements about, well, see, this is why he's not the MVP. That's lazy. And it's not accurate.
Denver is clearly overmatched, but I don't think that makes Golden State overrated. Like, Golden State at both ends is a problem. And listen, I love Memphis. And listen, I'm giving you grief. I do love Phoenix. And I think when you have a Chris Paul and the rest of that roster, yes, they are adept at playing without one of their superstar guards.
Yeah.
I think New Orleans is going to be more problematic moving forward without Devin Booker than you believe.
They're going to be a nuisance. They're going to be a pain. They're going to be a nuisance. But I just don't think they have the closing ability against this great team.
Like, to win another game?
Turn it on. Phoenix, then win another game. Then they will not win another game.
I can't wait to see you sweat.
Mike, there's a reason. Even if you say, all right, look what their record is with CJ McCollum. Ingram was out for a while. So with Ingram back, they're a different team. There's a gulf. It's a Grand Canyon, really, between the Phoenix Suns and the New Orleans Pelicans.
You know, the more you double and triple down.
You're convincing yourself.
You're trying to convince yourself.
No, it's what you're doing. I'm not convincing myself.
That gulf got closed substantially.
No,
with Devin Booker being out for a couple of weeks.
In a game.
They were winning when Devin Booker got hurt, homie. They were winning when Devin Booker got hurt.
I'm saying in one game, they were able to take advantage. They won that game. They won their one. Put that in their digital yearbook, when they do their digital yearbook, talking about the season. What a great year in New Orleans. You know, our young stars, you know, grew up a little bit more, made a great trade, brought in CJ McCollum. Zion, he's coming back. And we won that one game.
Keep going.
That one game in the playoffs. I'm telling you what you're doing.
This is so
you
good. Say
I'm trying to convince
this is
myself.
All on tape. This is
I'm gonna
be
tell
a
you what's happening to you.
In case you missed it. It's gonna be a great
I'm
occasion.
Telling you, I look forward to it. Look forward to it. Make sure I line up with the camera. Make sure everything's right for when I come back on screen in 3 months. Okay. But I'm telling you what's happening for you. This is a young man from the East. Now I'm seeing like an 11, 12-year-old Michael Smith who's just standing up for his city. I love that.
No. I appreciate it. I wish that were the case. I told you, this ain't got nothing to do with my love for the 504. This ain't got nothing to do with New Orleans. This is about you.
It's all about 504.
I just want you to eat shit. That's all I want. That's all I care about. I mean, what, no, this thing got to do with New Orleans. I'm not a fair weather fan.
Who says that? Who admits that? Who admits that?
No, this is just, I'm just not because.
Who admits that?
This, keep this that goes
quiet.
Back.
You're like,
bro.
You make that
I am
public.
On every other. I'm saying the quiet part out loud. I'm on every Western Conference team's bandwagon at this point. Every one of them. I'm looking at it, and then, like, right now, I don't care if it's Dallas, I don't care if it's Golden State, I don't care if it's Memphis, whoever it is, I'm rolling with them against your Phoenix Suns. And I love Chris Paul.
Right.
I said this the other day, I was on Bomani Jones' podcast the other day, and I was like, man, I'm pulling for everybody for James Jones down, everybody from James Jones down, James Jones, Monty Williams, of course, Chris Paul, because I don't want to hear that Chris Paul is overrated, Chris Paul never won nothing stuff that will inevitably follow the Suns if for some reason Chris Paul and the Suns falter again this year. At least they made the finals last year. They come up short this year. Nobody's going to give them an excuse that, you know, injury, bad luck bit Chris Paul again in the form of Devin Booker's injury. It's going to be like, oh, see, Chris Paul can't win anything. I'm not looking forward to that, but I am looking forward to you eating your words. So, sorry, Chris. You just collateral damage here.
So, looking forward, but I may eat my words, but it's going to be later in the summer. What month is this? April? It ain't going to be this month. And it ain't going to be next month. So, it ain't happening. Phoenix is going to dismiss New Orleans. New Orleans
okay,
get out
you're
the
wrong
way.
About
just
that.
Get out the,
okay, you're wrong
get
about
out the
that.
Way. Get
okay,
out
you're
the
wrong.
Way.
But okay, The government will stipulate. Okay, let's say they make quick work of New Orleans in the second round. Now, let's pivot to this other series. I mean, talk about putting off my city. You had jokes the other day about how Utah, Salt Lake City, long time ago, stole the Jazz from New Orleans.
Yeah, they
did. This is the worst. They're doing a disservice, not just to basketball in Utah or basketball in general, but to jazz music. Like, this is an affront to the art of jazz in general. Right. Like, I can't even listen to Coltrane the same now without thinking about this overrated-ass team that every second we waste in the regular season talking about whether or not this year will be different for Utah.
So tired of them. I'm tired of them.
Listen, as much grief as the Timberwolves are rightfully so getting today, it could be worse. You could be the Jazz. You could be the Utah Jazz losing to Spencer Dinwiddie, no disrespect, Spencer Dinwiddie and Jalen Brunson at the crib while Luka Doncic plays cheerleader. No, he's really good.
Hey,
what is he got, like 72 points
and
one turnover in two games?
You
want to
talk about, if you want to call Jordan Poole,
give him all
the
money.
You want to call Jordan Poole a star, if you want to say he's headed towards stardom, so is this guy, Jalen Brunson. Shout out. And took a dirty hit yesterday, had to leave the game for 4.5 minutes, came back and continued to do work. So back-to-back games, gives them 41 and 31. Not bad for Jalen Brunson. But let me talk about
I'll just say this real quick. About just to connect the Suns. If you think that they inevitably beat
Yeah.
Phoenix, not even inevitably. Excuse me, inevitably beat New Orleans or quickly beat New Orleans. You think it's over? So you think it's Suns in five even without Devin Booker, right?
Suns in five. Yeah.
Okay. The Jazz look like they're done. I ain't giving them a fighting chance. They're checked out. They're done. We've lost them. Okay.
Right.
Might not want to make it too quick, because if Luka's on the way back and the Suns see the Mavericks too soon, that can be problematic for your Suns as well.
Okay.
I wouldn't sleep on Dallas. I love Dallas coming into these playoffs. Remember, I kept bringing them up. I didn't know that they'd be up 2-1 without Luka. But maybe that says more about the Jazz and how fraudulent they are.
See, the Jazz, this mix, and I think it will change because, you know, who's in charge in Utah? I don't know what his title is there. Danny Ainge. His nickname in Boston was Danny Change. They just call him Danny Change. Because he just really likes to make deals. He's not a guy who's just going to sit there and let things happen. So yeah. I don't know if it's with Quinn Snyder. I don't know if it's with Rudy Gobert. He's going to leave Donovan Mitchell alone. Donovan Mitchell staying. But something about the mix just keeps sending them to the same kind of pattern. I mean, think about this. If they lose this series, which I think they will, that'll be the third time in 4 years that they've lost in the first round. So they didn't lose in the first round last year, but last year was almost worse. Last year, they're the number one seed in the Western Conference. They're number one. We talked about them all year. I ripped them at the beginning of the season. I said, oh, the Jazz. Okay,
yeah,
nice little regular season team. They ain't gonna do nothing. They get into the playoffs. They do. They lose their first game to Memphis. They win four straight. Okay, here we go. Then they take on the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard is out. Same situation. You look at it, oh man, the Clippers have to play the Jazz without Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
They lose 4-2 to the Clippers, including they blew some big leads. Clippers came out. It was just a mess. And here they are again with a team without its best player. And they're down 2-1, losing this game at home. Like, I'm just tired. I'm tired of watching them. I'm tired of their story. I know what's going to happen.
They're done.
If you bring this group back, to Salt Lake City, what they'll do is they'll win about 50 to 55 games in the regular season. They'll all talk about, hey, nobody pays attention to us. It's because we're in a small market. It's because we're the Utah Jazz, blah, 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 blah. And then they'll lose in the first or second round. Done. Get out of the way.
Yeah, no.
Break up
this band. Did you see that stat, though? I mean, 109 out of 121 three-pointers allowed have been open. 62 wide open. Like, if that's not emblematic of just general disinterest in defense, I don't know what is. They ought to be ashamed of themselves. And meanwhile, the Lakers are like, oh, we want Quinn Snyder. Do you? I mean, is that exactly the best job interview for the Lakers if they end up going a different direction or remixing things with the Jazz? But no, man. All I'm saying though is like Dallas. I like Dallas coming in. I did not. I thought they were in trouble without Luka against Utah.
I remember you talked about him. Yeah, I remember
you talked about Dallas. Tailpipe with Utah. But
you talked about Dallas all year.
Dallas is not going to be easy for either Phoenix or New Orleans. Dallas is not going to be easy for either Phoenix or New Orleans. I'm just saying.
You can't say it with a straight face. I'm not going to take you seriously because you can't say it with a straight face.
Okay, I need you to say this with a straight face as we go to break. Go ahead and roll the music, Gary. Just for the record, just as we go into this weekend, you're telling me that your Suns against the field take and your Suns are not in trouble against New Orleans, who they just lost to at home, and no Devin Booker, you don't want to walk even just a little bit. Either of those things. Well,
you have not come off of either
of those takes.
I'm not going to be the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm not looking too far ahead, so I'm going to stay right here in this series I'm in now. I'm telling you that the series I'm in now against the Pelicans, we, the Suns, The New Orleans Pelicans, winning is over in New Orleans. It's over. Next win that comes from the city of New Orleans will be by the New Orleans
Saints. I need you
Saints.
to stop. I need you to stop. See, you're just throwing shade at my city. America has two great cities, New Orleans and San Francisco. Everywhere else is Cleveland. They didn't even say Akron. They said Cleveland. That's what Tennessee Williams said.
Oh,
don't nobody
man.
Vacation in Akron, I'll have you know.
Yeah, they do. Yes, they do.
Family reunions, maybe.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Michael, I'll tell you what. If I were Alabama consensus first team All-American offensive tackle Evan Neal, I wouldn't answer any questions. I wouldn't do any visits. I wouldn't do any interviews, any workouts. I just show every NFL team this video of me doing a split box jump at 6'7", 340 pounds. Like, what else do you need to see? Like, no wonder my man didn't work out at the combine and only did position drills at his pro day. That's all the evidence you need of the kind of freak athlete Evan Neal is. And Evan Neal is here now looking real studious. You got the memo on the glasses. You're fitting right in the brother from another. Man. It is really good to see you. You are one of seven siblings. So my first question for you is, as you've accepted the invitation to the draft next week in Las Vegas, is who all going to be there? Like what you got planned for Vegas with you and the family?
Yeah, for Vegas, my mom and my dad and my two older brothers, they're going to be in the green room with me. But back home, it's going to be a huge draft party, like a community event at the Agri Civic Center. There's going to be over like 1,000 people there. Like a lot of my family that ain't going to be able to get to Vegas, they're going to be able to just have a good time and just celebrate there.
That's awesome.
Seven.
I mean, when you think when you think about everything you've done, sorry, Michael, when you think about everything you've done to get to this point, Evan, and all that you've sacrificed and all that you've done to get to this point in your career, now that your dream is about to become a reality, what are the memories, what are you cherishing and holding dear, what are you reflecting upon is the word I'm looking for, as you approach this seminal moment in your life?
You know, it's just a real, like, gratifying, like, humble feeling. You know, working as hard as I have my entire life to get to this moment and for it to just come into fruition right in front of my eyes is just a testament to, you know, all the hard work my parents put in throughout the years, you know, everything that they've invested in, my brothers and sisters and I, you know, and just, you know, just like my family. I have a really great family, like my aunts, my uncles, you know, just all of the support I've been getting back home, you know, so it definitely just makes it that much more sweeter when I know I'm making them proud. So it's been really special.
Let's talk about those siblings, though, because I always think about where folks who are only children, and that's fine, and they always look at people who have brothers and sisters, and they say, hey, what was that like? So, you know, I got a couple of siblings. Michael has a sibling, too. What was it like for you just being around so many people all the time? If you could just say, hey, this is what I got out of it, or maybe a lesson that you got, a lesson or two that you got out of having so many people around you.
Yeah, coming from a big family is always cool because you kind of always have a friend, you know, someone to hang out with, talk to. It kind of got stressful, all of us sharing one bathroom, but kind of get past that. I can just remember, you know, just being with my brothers and sisters, just, you know, spending time together. You know, my brothers and I just going to the basketball court to play pickup basketball, just going outside, you know, throwing the football around. You know, those are just memories and things that you never forget.
You've had two uncles drafted, Cleveland Gary and Jimmy Jones. So your family is no stranger to the NFL draft. What have they told you about the experience? Obviously, it's a much bigger deal now than it was when they were drafted. It's much more spectacle to it. But also, Evan, like, what do you think you're going to be feeling? You know what I mean? You shouldn't have to wait long. Nobody expects you to wait long. But what do you think you'll be feeling, no matter how prepared you are for this moment, no matter how much you've done to arrive at this moment? Like, the emotions, can you even imagine what's going to go through your mind when you hear your name called?
Right. Well, Cleveland's actually, that's my cousin, you know. But
I'm sorry.
Yeah, just, yeah, it's all good. Just, you know, just growing up and just hearing like their stories and their journeys, you know, just how tough of a level, you know, playing the NFL was, and just how they, you know, was able to, you know, maintain for their time playing, you know, which was always cool to hear. And as far as like my feelings or emotions next week, you know, I'm just excited. I'm sure I'll be excited, you know, a little anxious, antsy, nervous. You know, my dreams are, you know, going to be a phone call away, you know. So I'm sure it's going to be some uncertainty. But, you know, above all, you know, everything's a blessing, you know, just to be in this situation, to be able to, you know, change my family's life and be able to continue to do the thing that I love. You know, it really doesn't get any better. So I'm thankful.
You know, pretty soon you won't be talking about scenes like this. You won't be talking about your college years. You'll be focused on your pro career. But right now, I really want to get behind the wall of Alabama a little bit. There's a lot of mystery and intrigue with Alabama. I know I have some because you all disappointed me last year, last calendar year. I'm an Ohio State fan, and that game was over in the first half, Evan. I'm really disappointed in that. But what was it like just being around so many pros, so many talented players, and be a part of that program? How would you describe it?
Well, being in a competitive environment like that just forces you to come in and have to compete and work hard every day, you know, especially like in the practice field, just going up against guys that, you know, are already in the NFL, you know, just working hard every day just to get each other better. You know, that iron sharpening iron is definitely something that I'm appreciative of, you know, coming from Alabama for sure, and something that I definitely always remember.
Duke, you started every game your freshman year at left guard. You missed one game, but started every other game your sophomore year at right tackle. The only game you missed was because of COVID, and you came back and played in the SEC championship game. And then you started every game at left tackle this past year. So you're versatile, you're durable, you're dependable. I don't know if there's much more you want on anybody's resume, but then you read scouting reports and you hear people talk about you, they say he's safe. He's a sure thing. He's a safe bet. What does it mean to you to hear people talk about you in those terms, that you're a safe bet and a sure thing?
It's definitely good to hear, for sure. Kind of, you know, reassures that I've been doing something right, but I'm not perfect. I definitely have a lot more room to grow and a lot of areas to improve and just, you know, overall get better, you know. So I'm definitely excited, you know, to see what the future unfolds.
Like what?
Where would you
what
say
you in particular?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to see, you know, how far I can take the game, you know, just to see just exactly how good of a player that I can be, just to see what my game develops, just to know what it's like to be able to, you know, I know what it's like to, you know, be in a dog fighting the war on a college level, but to know what it's like to be in a dog fighting the war on the NFL level, you know. So I'm just excited for things like that, for sure.
You know, as Mike pointed out, you have some versatility. You've been across the offensive line. What position do you like the best and why?
Well, coming out of high school, you asked me that question, I'd say left tackle. You know what? Because at that time, I was most comfortable there. And, you know, when I went to Alabama and having to play so many different positions and only having one year at each of those positions, I can say I feel comfortable at all three. Now, I do see myself as a tackle, whether it be right or left. You know, since I played left tackle last year, I'm a little bit more comfortable, you know, right now. But I'm definitely very comfortable at right tackle as well, because I've had an entire season of right tackle snaps.
But you know what's interesting about that, Evan? And Michael, you and I haven't really talked. That doesn't mean what it used to mean. Like once upon a time,
yeah,
obviously,
right,
you know, left tackle, blind side, that was the premier position. Like everybody was getting drafted. Where you're going to get drafted was a blind side pass protector. The premier pass rusher was on a defense's right side, quarterback's blind side. Like, bro, you need both. With the pass rushers around the league and the bookend pass rushers, like the right tackle does not take a back seat to left tackle at all. What would you say are some of the technical differences for you, if any? Why are you so comfortable on both sides?
You know, really just going out there and just getting the feel for the game, you know, from my perspective, from my point of view, pretty much the most challenging thing I can say was just like flipping your feet, you know, and like I'm pushing off of my my kick foot and just flipping it. So you're just flipping it from right to left. Like, that's kind of how I process it in my mind. You know, more, you know, other than that, everything's pretty much, you know, the same. The set angle is the same. The timing is pretty much the same, but it's just flipped.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody, is there a tackle in the league right now that you look at and say, yeah, that's kind of my game? Anybody that you see similarities or someone you aspire to be like?
Well, yeah, like a lot of the NFL tackles that I've watched, even since I was a kid, like watching Tyron Smith, Trent Williams. There's a lot of guys, you know, plenty of guys that I can name. But just the guy that I follow the most were probably those two.
Yeah. What have you enjoyed about this process, man? I mean, like, you know, we kicking it, but it's been one long job interview, whether it's Zooms, whether it's visits, whether it's the combine, whether it's the pro day. What's your best takeaway from this entire pre-draft process?
The fact that I only got to go through it one time, you know, so just try to learn as much as I can and just take it all in, you know what I mean? You know, it's pretty cool. It can be overwhelming at times, but at the end of the day, I mean, shoot, I'm living out my dreams. So, I mean, so how can I not, you know, be happy, you know, with the position that I'm in today? Yeah, it can be hectic, it can be stressful, but, you know, a lot of things in life are. So I'm just thankful. I'm happy. I feel like the coolest things was probably just, you know, going to the combine, you know, meeting with all the coaches, you know, for the first time. And, yeah, for sure.
You said you're living out your dreams. My final question for you is, when did it become a dream of yours, and how did you, at various stages, how did you pursue it to make that dream a reality?
But I really started taking football serious when I was in eighth grade. That's when I, you know, kind of started to realize that I could take it to the next level. And whenever I went to IMG, you know, that's when I really started to, you know, come up with a plan. You know, I left home at a young age, you know, to just to get better at football, you know, to get around better resources, better players, better coaching. And I feel like that paid off dividends for sure.
By all accounts, and even just in our interaction, man, you just seem so, like, mature, focused, about your business. You know, what kind of person, we know the player, but what kind of person will an NFL team be getting, will an NFL city and community be getting in Evan Neal?
A guy that's going to come in and, you know, do his best to contribute to the organization in a positive way and work as hard as I can. I'm just pretty much a laid-back guy. A lot of times I like to stay to myself and just kick it, like to be around family, you know, not going to cause any trouble or anything like that. You know, just pretty much just come in and work hard and do what I can to win. Sure.
Mike, somebody, some GM going to turn in that card and sleep well that night. They're going to be like,
yeah,
no,
that's
we straight.
Right. That's good.
We good for the next 10, 12 years. Yeah. Evan Neal, man, congratulations on your journey. Congratulations on your dream coming true, man. We'll see you out in Las Vegas, man. All the best.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you guys for having me.
All right,
Thank you, Evan.
I feel like a GM. Like, if that dude came in my in our meeting, I'd be
we're good.
How do you not take him?
Yep, drafted.
How do you not take
it?
Alabama, versatility, maturity, dependability, durability.
Got it all.
Upside, you know.
And you know your team needs linemen anyway.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
There's been a lot of speculation out there, the possibility of you guys trading Kyler. Can you rule that out?
Zero chance. Nothing's changed. And then, you know, really, the way we've approached it is we have free agency, we have the draft, and then, you know, we'll take a deep breath and sort of refocus. And that's the same reason that every other player that's been a third-year quarterback has been done in the middle of the summer to late summer. And it's no different for us, you know. It's just sort of the way that the system works. And but nothing has changed in terms of him being our long-term and short-term quarterback.
Steve, knowing that you at some point were going to have to pay him, have you been talking about this, playing for this for the last 3 years then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, I was a decent GM when Carson Palmer was our quarterback. When he retired, I wasn't very good. I am smart enough to know that Kyler Murray makes me a better GM. So, we took him with the first overall pick. We love him. The guys continue to improve. He's made us a better football team. So we're really excited about his future.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, listen, okay. Man. This has been the most eventful NFL offseason that I can recall. Just right. The NFL will not take a break. Yeah. It's been incredible. You know what this offseason does not need? Manufactured storylines. And I told you from the beginning, this was going nowhere. He was going nowhere. We talked about leverage. We had knocked down, drag out arguments about the kind of leverage Kyler Murray had.
Those are two separate conversations.
And then here he is, reading the field and reading the room. He is reading the field and reading the room, realizing I ain't going nowhere.
You know what I just thought of?
I want to win Super Bowls with the Cardinals because my alternative is what exactly?
Yeah.
So glad we could put this behind us because there was nothing ever to see here.
I said the last win in New Orleans, the next win in New Orleans would come from the Saints. No, it actually comes from you. That's another win. You got to win. Okay, so one more win for New Orleans. That comment that you
look,
just
and
made.
I want him to get his money.
You're right. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. That he didn't have the. Ultimately, you were right about the leverage. He didn't have leverage. But when you say manufactured storyline, I don't think it was a manufactured storyline in that he had
drama.
An issue.
Manufactured drama.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It was a temper tantrum.
I don't know.
Between the scrubbing of the social media, between the statement from the agent, it's like, bruh, what you gonna, like, you just finished your third year. Like, they have you under control for the fourth year, fifth year, and the franchise tag if they want it. They're not going to move you or give you what you want. You're not Russell Wilson. You're not Aaron Rodgers. Hey. Like, you are not going, unless he was ever truly willing to not show up and play. But even then, what were his options? My point was always, a player is only as faithful as his options. And he had none,
I guess,
other than to play ball. For the Arizona Cardinals, it just is what it is. Hopefully, they come to an agreement and he gets his money. But this idea that he has some kind of like, this gives you power over me, like he had power over the Cardinals. No, putting out statements and whatnot.
I think he realized it. He's a smart guy. Kyler Murray's a smart guy, so he did realize what you said. I'm serious. I'm not being sarcastic when I say you got the win here. Where he didn't have any left. He had no place to go. So even though he was angry, probably upset about things that were going on with his contract and other things that we don't even know about, his options were very limited. But I do want to say, in 2022, if you're of a certain age, if you scrub your social media accounts, that's the equivalent of throwing somebody's stuff out the window. Was that waiting to exhale? She threw his stuff out the window.
Lighting a car on fire.
The car's on fire. That's the equivalent of it. Now, so we look at him and be like, oh, that ain't no big deal. So what? He just cleaned up his social media. No, that's how it goes in 2022. If you just.
Oh, no, I'm not saying he wasn't pissed. Yeah. I'm not saying he wasn't pissed. I'm saying, what was he going to do about it? You know what I'm saying? Like, and also, if I'm Kyler Murray, and I know, listen, you want your security, you want to get paid sooner rather than later. Everybody's not like Lamar Jackson. Sometimes you guys just, hey, pay me what I'm worth. But clearly, there's a disconnect between what Kyler Murray believes he should be paid and what the Cardinals want to pay him. Talk about leverage. If I'm Kyler Murray, I don't know that I want to do a contract. Security concerns aside, I don't want to do a contract after the game I just had. You're only as funky as your last cut. And he stunk the last time we saw him against the eventual Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams. So I wouldn't want to come off of that and do a contract. I want to wait until I actually win a playoff game or playoff games or maybe even win a Super Bowl with the Cardinals before I do that contract. I get you want to get it sooner rather than later. But
you don't have to do that now. You don't have to do that now. Like they
are. You're talking about as a quarterback?
They are. Oh, yeah. As a quarterback, you don't have to do that. I mean, not, right. As a franchise quarterback, you don't have to do that. You know, you don't. Sure. They'll pay you whether you win a playoff game or not. You go get paid.
Which is
look here's a good news.
Which
for
is why
good
the Cardinals.
Go ahead. Which is why the Cardinals what?
Oh no. I'm saying why the Cardinals were never going to entertain. To Steve Kime's point, they were never going to entertain moving on from him just because he was getting impatient. Again, I don't mean to minimize his beef or his frustration. Like, again, get your money. You know, the rookie salary scale, it stinks if you feel like you've outperformed it. Look at all the wide receivers that want to be moved. I just never thought in a million years that the Arizona Cardinals would move on from Kyler Murray, one. Two, I also don't. I never thought that Kyler Murray was just had a realistic option at his disposal. This wasn't Aaron Rodgers threatening to retire, per se. You know.
But I would say that he's in a good situation. Kyler Murray is, unless it's the only way he should be disappointed. He should be disappointed if he insists on being the top paid quarterback in football. If he wants to be like the number one quarterback in football financially, okay.
Do we know what the disconnect is? I haven't seen it. Have you?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what it is, but I'm just telling you, with numbers like that, those are all good numbers. Those are good numbers. Okay? For a young quarterback, good. Really good. And it doesn't even include his rushing numbers. So, and that's impressive too. But the numbers have gone up. So if you just sit there, all you have to do to be a quarterback in 2022, all you have to do is just be patient. Sit there. If your franchise likes you and you got a contract coming up, you're good. You're good. The problem is, one, if you want the best contract in football, or two, you're like Baker Mayfield and your franchise doesn't like you. So then you got problems. But if you like Kyler Murray, you're going to get a great contract. Because the market has demanded it.
Yeah, right. And if they were crazy enough to trade him, you know, I don't think there'd be a shortage for for his services across the league. I mean, I have no idea what the Cardinals would realistically expect in return for a guy that young and that good. But yeah, point is, man, I'm giving you grief, but I mean, this was never going anywhere because he was never going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, the idea about him being moved or was he going to hold? Like, no. Now, meanwhile.
But, hey, before you get to the meanwhile, I'll just say this.
Yeah.
Now, Steve Kime went hard. Steve Kime went hard in the paint and said, zero chance. Zero chance.
Zero. Unequivocally. Zero.
Zero. We took him first overall. We like him. Right. I'm a better GM with Kyler Murray. Also, right. Now he went harder than Pete Carroll did when Pete Carroll said it's not our intention to trade Russell Wilson, and they traded him.
Yeah.
If you trade him now, ooh, what a story! What a story! If you trade him now, you're kind of.
Lose credibility? Look, first of all, nobody believes anything they say.
Zero credibility if you trade him now, right? Zero.
If you said zero chance, you have zero credibility? Well, again, I would counter with how much credibility do any of these people have this time of year anyway? So if he said we're not trading him, he said zero chance. We're not trading
him. Zero chance.
Whatever it is, and then go back and trade him. It wouldn't be the first time somebody said one thing and did another. On the flip side, I do believe him because he's 24 years old. He's in his third year. He just finished his third year. You got him under his rookie contract for this year and his fifth year option and a franchise tag if you want him. What's the old saying? They got two types of GMs, those that have quarterbacks and those that's looking for quarterbacks. Ain't nobody trying to go back out in these streets. Remember that awesome Dell Curry thread? You don't want to be out here in these streets. Steve Kime don't want to be out here in these streets looking for a quarterback.
It's Baker. That's who it is. It's an Oklahoma guy. Either go with the Oklahoma guy you have or the Oklahoma guy that Cleveland didn't want. One of them.
The meanwhile I was going to go to was Deebo Samuel. Deebo Samuel seems to be a little bit trickier, but everybody has said since this story broke early in the week exactly what I said. Which is that if you're San Francisco, you do not trade him. And everything everybody's reported is that San Francisco has no intention, or they don't want to trade Deebo Samuel. Okay. And if they did, they would want a quote-unquote king's ransom for him. Now, the last time we talked about this, and nothing's really materialized since then, except for the fact that he keeps posting stuff and deleting it, which is getting on my nerves. You know, it's like, why are you deleting? Nothing is actually deleted in 2022. Right. But why are you deleting the most benign, innocuous commentary?
Right.
Like, it's not even like, okay, you know, you clowning an NFL insider that lately everybody's been clowning. So it's not like, you know, anybody's gonna get mad at you for cracking on an insider if you don't think he has accurate information. But whether it's his likes, whether it's his tweets, whatever it is, it's like, okay, man, if you're not gonna come out and tell us what it is, that's fine. But don't throw a stone and then try to hide your hand in the digital age.
Right.
That aside, do you still feel as strong as you did initially about the fact that they have to move him? Because you were like, oh, the Niners should just go ahead and move him, recoup draft capital that they gave up to get Trey Lance. Okay, where are you now?
Debo's different. I feel the same way, but he is different in that he's in the final year of his contract, correct? So
yes, Deebo, second round pick, fourth year. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
So he's in the final year of his contract. And he doesn't want to be there. He's a huge part of your offense.
For whatever reason.
Now,
how is he?
I don't know. Yeah, right.
Where he's living, who the hell knows? Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to trade him. You don't have to. But if you got a rookie quarterback, and if Deebo sits out half a training camp, that's a problem, right? I'm not saying he's got leverage, Mike. Okay, I'm not going to go back down the leverage thing again. Because they can keep him, they can franchise tag him, they can do all this kind of stuff just to keep him in place for a while. But his only thing is he can make it a little uncomfortable for them. Jimmy Garoppolo is hurt, they're going to trade him. Trey Lance, second-year quarterback. Deebo, number one weapon. If the number one weapon is not going to be around just to help out the young quarterback, it's going to put him back a little bit. It's not going to necessarily sink their season. But it'll hold him back for a month and a half. And that's significant. I'll say this. For as far as the King's ransom, yes. What do you want me to do? Yes. The answer is yes. What do you want me to give up for Deebo Samuel? Yes. You want me to trade two first-round picks? Yes. You want a player too? Yes. I love him. I love Deebo Samuel.
So here's the thing, though. Here's the thing I struggle with. So when we talked about this, I'm sorry, the days run together. Did this story break?
You weren't here yesterday. So don't let that get you confused. You weren't here yesterday. So it wasn't Thursday. Somebody say Thursday. You weren't here on Thursday. So maybe it was Tuesday. Okay. Maybe he said it Tuesday or Wednesday.
Sure.
You got four options. Sure. You got three options. Yeah. You ain't say it today. Yeah. One today, Friday.
Yeah.
One yesterday. So either Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday.
Yeah, right. No, okay. Yeah, That's fair.
Like, throw a dart.
Between the two of us, I'm the load maintenance guy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to miss, 15 to 20 games a season. You know,
I'm trying to play 82. I'm trying to play 82.
Yeah. You old school. I appreciate it. Yeah. No, I was going to say, I think we referenced it or touched on it in the previous conversation about Deebo, which is like, as entertaining as it is for us to watch him be the ultimate weapon in this wide back, that there were early on whispers that he didn't like the way he was used. Well, since whenever we had the first conversation, there's been additional reporting substantiating that he did not like the way he was used. I loved Deebo Samuel with the ball in his hands, however he gets the ball in his hands. But what I love most about Deebo Samuel is, wait for it, the way he was used in San Francisco. So I guess my question would simply be, and there are creative ways to get him the ball without handing it to him out of the backfield. But he was too good for his own good. Because if I'm San Francisco, like, man, like, really? You don't want to average 6.2 yards a carry as a running back? You don't want to be our best running back as well as our best wide receiver? It's like, That's disappointing. And if I'm trading for you, I really would like to, it's a copycat league. I'd really, really, really like to use you the way Kyle Shanahan used you. You sure we can't talk you into it if you gave you more money to do it? So that's the only thing is like, I told you the other day. Yeah. I told you the other day. He is my favorite receiver in the NFL. I hesitate to say he's best in a league that includes Cooper Kupp and others, Devontae Adams and others.
Devontae Adams.
He's my favorite receiver. Yeah. But what makes him my favorite receiver is the way Kyle Shanahan used him so creatively. Is he, do I value, I'm talking about Michael Smith or another team for that matter. Yeah. Do I value him the same way if he's used exclusively as a wide receiver? I'm not certain.
You know what, Mike?
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It makes sense. But this is what I would love to hear. This is what I'd love to hear in any industry at any time. But let's just stick with football. So San Francisco 49ers, John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, talking to Debo. Debo. Okay. Hey, man, it's Debo. We love you, man. We love you. You are the best wide receiver in football. You are amazing. You're the best player in football with the ball in your hands as a non-quarterback. I love what you do. I love your attitude. I love your toughness. I love your approach, your football IQ. And we're going to pay you unlike anybody else in football. See, that's the problem. That last part never happened.
You still think it comes down to the money. You still think it comes down to the money.
That's part of it. That's part of it. If you, if I'm all of these things that you say to people during your press conferences, and Kyle Shanahan was just saying it at the owners' meetings, and he said it during the season, oh, I don't know what we do without Debo. Debo's so special. Debo, his vision, on and on. If you feel this way, pay for it. And so if they had done that, right now, Debo can say, I want to be closer to home, and then delete it. I don't want to be in California, then delete it. Or, go at NFL insiders and then back away from it. I don't know. But I do feel this way. If you say immediately, if you tell people how you feel about them when you feel it, before it gets to a contract situation, before it gets nasty, just say, look, we ain't going to wait for your contract to be up. I'm going to tell you right now, man, you're the best. I've never seen anybody like you, and we're going to pay you. We're going to make you the best paid wide receiver / weapon in football.
But here's the issue. So I'm going back to the conversations that we had, and I remember you just scoffed. You wouldn't even entertain. You defaulted to the notion, the adage that is, whatever somebody says it's not about the money, it's about the money.
It's about the money, right?
For whatever it's worth, people keep suggesting, insiders, that it's not about the money. But this is where I struggle. And help me out with this. Help me figure this out, at least as best we can on the outside.
But I'm going to give it back to you. Just want to say, just real quick, it's what a coincidence that it's not about the money when his contract is up this year. But anyway.
Well, maybe it's not about the money at this point. Maybe right at this point it's about more than just the money. But here's what I'm struggling with. Do you make Debo Samuel the highest paid receiver in the league, or among the highest paid receivers in the league, strictly as a wide receiver if you're San Francisco? 1,400 yards, I get it. 18 yards a catch, I get it. But do you pay him? You have him at San Francisco, so you should value him more than anybody else, okay? So do you pay him what he presumably is looking to be paid if he is saying, yeah, but I don't want to be used in the way that makes me so valuable to you?
Right.
Conversely, if you're Debo Samuel, I don't have a degree in sports management, but if I'm his agent, the very thing I am pushing in negotiations is to be paid unlike any receiver in the NFL, because he plays unlike any receiver in the NFL.
Yes.
He plays a different position. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you're San Francisco, I don't want to pay him if he's not going to, do the job that we want him to do. And if you're Debo Samuel, I don't know that I would be saying or putting it out there that I don't want to do that job, which legitimizes my claim to being paid more than any receiver I've been paid.
Great question.
You know what I mean?
I tell you, you're right. If I'm his agent, if I'm him, I just make it simple. I tell you, what I do is tough. What I do is unusual. I'll continue to do it if you pay for it. Now, if you don't pay for it, if you don't pay for
how
it,
much we talking?
No, I don't want to do that.
Everybody got a number. Do that. How much we talking?
There's a number. There's a number. There's
right.
a number.
Right.
So, yes, it's it, the price, I can tell you right now, the price is higher than $30 million based on what we just saw there. Tyreek Hill, that $30 million. And I know it's an average guaranteed money. What is Tyreek Hill's guaranteed money? We're talking about $72 million, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
So it's either higher than $30 million or my guaranteed money has to be more than $72. It's more than Tyreek Hill because I'm doing more. I'm not saying I'm better,
yeah.
but I'm doing more than Tyreek Hill. I'm doing more than Devontae Adams. I'm doing more than all of these guys. Keenan Allen, I do more than Godwin. So you got to pay me more.
I haven't watched every play of Deebo Samuels, every carry from Deebo Samuel last year. But this idea that, like, oh, you know, the wear and tear of playing running back. I don't remember him getting blown up like talking about it at running back. No more than at wide receiver.
Yeah, he got,
I mean,
yeah,
like, I don't,
we showed
I, you
a
know,
clip where he got blown up.
That was
wide
at wide
receiver.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That was going over the middle. Like, and he was administering a lot of that punishment. Yeah, man.
I love watching him.
I know, right? I kind of like selfishly, I don't want him to give that role up. He's my, like, if I play fantasy football next year, I am doing everything I can to get that dude on my team.
Forget about fantasy football, dog. I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to put that narcotic in the air. Madden. I'm going
don't
to Madden.
It. Don't do it.
I'm taking San Francisco, then I'm going to trade Deebo to another team.
You trading him? Come on.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
You know, early on in, you know, my career, you know, my first couple of years here, we was in a situation where we was up and, you know, lost a game. So the message was, you know, just continue to fight, go out and battle. And we all know, you know, the game is, you know, never over till, you know, zeros on the clock at the end. So that was pretty much the message and just staying together.
All right, back together again with ProBasketballTalk.com's Kurt Heelan, a.k.a. our resident Ace Ventura. Hopefully we get some cameos throughout this segment as we've come to expect.
Lace is out. Sorry.
Exactly. But look, man, we were talking about, you know, we were unpacking last night's collapses, plural, on the part of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I invoked May 25th, I beg your pardon, May 25th, 2002, almost 20 years ago, when the Nets blew that 26-point lead to the Celtics, and New Jersey ended up winning the series. After last night, are you inclined to write off the Grizzlies? Excuse me, write off the Timberwolves? Or do you think the Grizzlies can respond in game four at home and make this the long series that many expect it to be, excuse me?
I think they can. I think this, it's so tough to judge young teams, right? Like, that's, if this were a veteran team, I'd be like, yeah, they'll make the adjustments. Like, I don't know. Maybe Cat should get more than 11 shots over two games, like shot attempts. Like, maybe we should start really feeding Karl Anthony Towns the rock a lot and use him more in a Jokic mode. I think they're capable of those adjustments. I think you're going to see them play better. But I'm still not convinced we've seen the best of the Grizzlies in this series. I think that they're also young. They're making mistakes. They're having flat periods. What I've loved from the Grizzlies, and then you're starting to see it from Chris Finch too, but Jenkins is out there like in game two, like, hey, Steven Adams, 3 minutes, you're out. Like,
yeah,
this isn't a good matchup for you. Coaches that are ruthless in their substitution and matchup patterns tend to do better in these situations. And I love that Jenkins did that. And he continued to do whatever it took to win. It's just his team doesn't seem to. Both of these teams are just inconsistent, aren't they? Like, inconsistent with their execution. And suddenly, Minnesota falls back, gets a little cold, and Ja Morant and Bain and everybody are just blowing by everybody. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're talking did about, fall behind by 26 and 25.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's not forget that.
And it did. They sure did. Like, we were talking earlier, Kurt, and Mike said, you know, primarily you're going to put a lot of this on Karl-Anthony Towns and just his approach. And as you alluded to, 11 shots over two games and foul trouble, big time foul trouble.
Yeah.
If you had to break it down, you look at it yesterday, just those two blown leads, two big blown leads for Minnesota. Who do you assign blame to? Like in like hockey, let's make it like hockey. 1, 2, 3. The first star, second star, third star.
First star is still got to be, this is Towns' team. At the end of the day, he's not necessarily that type of leader, which is why, while I have him one, I might have Pat Beverly too, right? He's the in-locker room voice of, well, top, constant voice, but like he's the guy firing up the troops. He's going to be the soul of the team. And they couldn't get the consistent play. They couldn't get the defensive effort consistently. They couldn't get, you know, the touches where they wanted them. Then at the end of the day, the coach has got to take some of that too, I think. And I'm not, but ultimately to me, I'll ask you guys, to me it always feels like it's a little more on the players. Like, I don't think the coaches were back there not making adjustments. It's just at the end of the day, Towns and everybody else couldn't get the young guys to execute that the way they wanted. And D'Angelo Russell's up and down, and they've got to find a way to adapt to that stuff and just be more consistent.
I mean, a timeout would have been nice, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
Jack,
I think that would have helped. But other than that, the franchise player got to stay on the floor, and he's got to impose as well. And that's what I was saying about game four, is this an opportunity for Minnesota and Karl-Anthony Towns in particular. You want to be a wolf or you want to be a sheep? You want to be Cat that we know during the regular season, or you want to be a kitten in the playoffs and have Draymond Green taking shuttle shots at you from that game? Speaking of that game, for all intents and purposes, that series is over.
Over.
Golden State, Michael and I keep going back on this. Even with Devin Booker's injury, we go back and forth on this. Even with Devin Booker's injury, Phoenix is still Holly's overwhelming favorite in the Western Conference. I know it's Denver, and I know they're overmatched, but I don't know how you can look at the ascension of Jordan Poole and not believe that that distinction belongs to the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference.
I don't think they're overwhelming anymore, but I think that because they get this is the mild hamstring strain, and he's out a couple of weeks, that they getting him back changes that dynamic a lot for them. I think part of it was, we also think they looked really bad because, well, they looked really bad in that game, but they were looking bad in that game before Booker got hurt. That was a really unsung-like outing, right? Like, they weren't getting – their transition defense was awful.
Tell this dude – hey, do me a favor. Tell this dude that they're in some kind of trouble. He out here talking about, like, New Orleans is going to be – that they're going to be the Big Easy for Phoenix. They're in a little bit of trouble, are they not, bye-bye, against New Orleans with no Devin Booker?
A little bit, but not. I still think we're going to see a very different team in Game 3. I still think we're going to see a much better – executing some, that was their execution special, like I said, defensively was just awful in that game. Yeah. And it was again unsuns-like, and I don't know if they got a little too confident after game one or what happened, but that was not the right team. That said, I've always said that the theory of the Warriors, the peak Warriors, the team we all fear, could beat the Suns. I was just not sure we'd get to see them. This is the perfect matchup for the Warriors to gain confidence in. You got Draymond on Jokic, which is the best possible matchup for him. But like, it's somebody he can, you know, still had what 37 of 11 last night. Like, Jokic still puts up numbers. He just can't lift up everybody else on that team the same way. And the guards are the three guard rotation is just destroying everything Denver has. But even in spite of, like, I can pick that apart and say, well, they're just playing in a great matchup. But they gained confidence, right? Like, they believe in themselves now. You can see the swagger back, and that makes them really dangerous. If they go into that Suns series, you know, that wouldn't be till the finals. And if they don't have to play them till the finals and Booker's back, I'm still going to lean towards the Suns. But they got to get there. The Suns are going to have to work for this one now, because there's some confidence in New Orleans now, right? Like, you can see what CJ has brought to that team. Like, they're going to have to earn it, but at the end of the day, I'm still going to pick the Suns.
Yeah, you're right. And also, they got to be careful because Smoothie King is a really tough place to play.
Bruh, will you stop with this? It's just this naming rights, dog. Damn. Smoothies are good. What do you have against smoothies? It's not the soft. That is not the softest arena name in the league.
What do you want, the Zartrans Gumbo Arena? What are you going to call that thing?
No, I just like getting it. It messes with Mike. It really upsets him. So I like doing that. Shame on me. You know, somebody asked me yesterday what the biggest surprise is, Kurt, from the Brooklyn Celtics series, and it's very simply Kevin Durant. All right, Kevin Durant scares me as much as any player in basketball, and yet I've seen him have as many turnovers as shots made. It's very close. I'm just surprised that the Celtics are doing this to him, and I'm not even convinced the Celtics are doing it to him. Is it the Celtics or is it Durant? What do you think?
I think it's a lot of Jason Tatum. I think this is the ascension of Jason Tatum because he is a better defender than, I mean, look, we've all talked about, you know, Marcus Smart just won Defensive Player of the Year. We're all, hey, they got to get Robert Williams back because, damn, poor Daniel Theis is just getting targeted. there's a huge target on his back every time he's out there. They're trying to isolate him.
And they're about to get him back soon.
Yeah, they're supposed to get him back.
He's supposed to play game three.
Yeah, limited minutes, that'll help. Let's be honest, less Daniel Theis, better for Boston. So they get him out there. But Tatum is the guy with the primary Durant matchup. He blocked a Durant jumper. Who blocks a Durant jumper, man? Like, you know, that's incredible in defense. He has played at a really high level on both ends. And Boston suddenly, especially with Middleton out, guys, we were talking about can somebody knock out the top of the West? With Middleton out, is Boston back to being the team you fear most in the East?
That was the one I told Michael the other day. The two teams that gave me pause in the East, because we talked throughout the season, Milwaukee deservedly so was our favorite, even if they weren't the number one seed. The two teams that gave me pause were the Celtics and the Heat. With Jimmy Butler fueling them the way he is. Now, having said that, I also, coming into the playoffs, foolishly underestimated Philadelphia. Now, granted, I could always fall back on Scottie Barnes being out. But Philadelphia, behind Joel Embiid, is back to being the team that we thought they were those first few games when James Harden came and Tyrese Maxey was, you know, the third star and this, that, and the other. Like, Philadelphia might end up making quick work of Toronto when I thought that the reverse would be the upset. I thought Philadelphia winning would be the upset coming into the series. That's how highly I thought of Toronto. Philadelphia may be as impressive as any team we've seen throughout these Eastern Conference finals, or playoffs, excuse me. Are you starting to factor in Philadelphia more than you did coming into these playoffs, Kurt Hillen?
I think you have to. Look, we knew Joel Embiid would be great. I was with you, by the way. I picked Toronto. I thought Toronto could pull the upset
here. That makes me
feel
better. Thank you.
Okay. I thought A, they could keep Joel Embiid semi in check. Nope. That has not happened. They have, look, James Harden has been good, not great. The tons of switchable wings on them. But Tyrese Maxey, Fred VanVleet is an all-defensive team level player. I don't know if he's actually going to make the all-defensive team. He is in heavy consideration from everybody I know who was voting. Like, he's in the mix for that kind of stuff, and he's getting torched by Maxey. Now, he's had the knee issue, and he's a little bit slowed, but Maxey dominating VanVleet has, to me, like, thrown the dynamic, and then Embiid, they just don't have an answer, and it's just been too much. And, yeah, Philly's back to being a threat. You know, that's an interesting matchup in the second round, right, against Miami. Like, that'll be fun. It's going to be – yeah, they're better than I expected out of this. And they look – like you said, when everything comes together for them, they look great. I wonder if Miami's going to be better at exposing it. But they've been – I thought Toronto would be, and they have just smoked Toronto.
Well, let me ask you this. Does Harden have another gear offensively, or is this just who he is right now? Because that's part of my calculus with Philadelphia. Yeah. Is like, are the shooting woes temporary – and it haven't been temporary, but can he become as explosive offensively, not just a facilitator, or is it Embiid, is it Maxey, and whatever you get from Harden is gravy at this point.
Yeah, Harden is still good, but guys, he just doesn't look as explosive as he did right 2 years ago in Houston, right? Like, he's not getting to the rim and blowing by guys. And yeah, he drew a lot of fouls then and all that, but he was getting those fouls going to the rim and then driving through you and draw the, so physically strong. He can draw that contact and still get the shot off. He's not getting to the rim. He's not getting by anybody anymore. He's relying on that step back and those jumpers, and it's just, they're not ever going to fall at the same rate as getting to the line and driving. So, and in the playoffs, he's not getting those calls anyway. I think this is who you get with James Harden. I think this is what he is. It's just that Embiid has been so great. Maxey's been so great. And other guys have knocked down shots. I think we've had good Tobias Harris games. Tobias Harris, by the way, freed Embiid for that game-winning shot with about the most illegal pick. I think a two-handed shove illegal pick. It was insane. That didn't get called. But you know what? He's making plays in moments too, and like they're getting enough from everybody else. When Embiid's playing like that, they're a threat.
Yeah, Kurt, we talked with Evan Neal of Alabama, the great tackle. That's what Tobias Harris did to Precious Achiuwa. It was almost like, man, I was like, what is that? It was unbelievable.
Tobias Harris is going to be a seventh-round pick, right? That's somebody's just going to snap him up.
Or with a block like that, second or third round. Let me ask you, this is my last question for you. Please come up with some kind of trade that makes sense so we can break up the Utah Jazz. I don't want to see them anymore. Oh, yeah. I'm tired of talking about them. They're great 50 and 32s, 51 and 31s. What are they going to do this year? And they just always disappoint. So how do we break up? Where's Rudy Gobert? Where can you trade Rudy Gobert? You're going to keep Donovan Mitchell. We just need to break up the Jazz.
That is their – look, what I've heard is – well, let me rephrase that. Because Utah's a pretty tight-lipped organization. Other teams expect them to shock Rudy and try to keep Donovan. Rudy Gobert is a deserving three-time defensive player of the year. He is one of the best centers in the game. But if you're going to have him on your team, you need to kind of run specific defenses. You have to have a pick-and-roll point guard or wing to play off of him a lot. Like, you need kind of specific things to really maximize what Rudy Gobert brings to the table. He's not plug-and-play in the way Donovan Mitchell or others, many other stars are. You can just plug them in. You kind of need something specific with him. And he's on a max deal. So I'm not sure the market is as great. And the real question is, guys, with, you know, the Knicks front office sitting there courtside of game one.
Right.
Is Donovan, look, Donovan's got, I think, 3 years left after this one on his contract. Might be four off the top of my head. I can't remember. But if you're not going to be able, if you're going to build around him again, you got to be sure he's staying. And if he's telling you, I'm gone to New York, or I'm gone the first chance I get when this contract is over, then you kind of have to rethink how you're doing it. So I'm not sure. Nobody's really sure what they're going to do. The plan ultimately is to try to build around Donovan again. But I don't know how fast you can do that there. And I don't know that they're going to be able to make this. It's kind of like Portland right now, trying to rebuild on the fly around Damian. Like, that sounds great on paper, but it's pretty difficult to pull off.
Yeah. Well, speaking of difficult, after the Suns struggle with the Pelicans, Dallas is going to be no pushover, especially once they get Luka back. So that'll make for an interesting second round matchup. Hey, man. We appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much, Kurt Heelan. We'll talk to you next week, man. These playoffs, man.
I look forward to it.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And these injuries are certainly going to, as usual, determine who's left standing. Thank you, brother.
Anytime, thank you, man. Kurt. This is fun.
The player who I think of this particular group of pass rushers that in 2, 3, 4 years we could be talking about as the best of the group is Jermaine Johnson from Florida State. Now, I doubt he'll be the number one pick in the draft, but I think that his combination of traits and his skill set are such that I could easily see him being the best pass rusher of the group as time goes by. And I think that he's only scratching the surface of his ability to rush the quarterback. So I think that he's a guy you can line up on the edge. I think you can move him around your front, use him in what we call a joker, where he stands up and moves around, and you look for matchups with him. And he's got excellent closing burst and speed. So I really liked his tape a lot. He had some really dominant snaps in the run game versus North Carolina State left tackle Ikiakwanu, which is pretty surprising given Ekwonu is just a man amongst boys when it comes to the run game.
High praise from Greg Cosell for the ACC Defensive Player of the Year, Jermaine Johnson II, who is here with us now. It's good to see you, man. And, man, let's just start with your journey because, Michael, I'm going to tell you, there's something about guys that's like come up the rough side of the mountain for me. Like, you know, going from Independence Community College in Lawrence, Kansas, to Georgia and then transferring and blowing up at Florida State the way that you did. How is your journey a positive when it comes to what you're going to bring to an NFL franchise at the next level?
Man, I could talk about my journey all day. It formed who I am. I'm just incredibly thankful for the journey. That's my biggest blessing. A lot of people talk about blessings from God and, you know, they like to say things that are tangible. Blessings from God aren't materialistic, man. And my biggest blessing is my journey and who I turned out to be from that. So, it's just every step of the way, you know, I wouldn't take anything away, any decision away. I'm very blessed to have been here and done everything that I have.
You count it all joy. Mike, we're getting a word from this rookie.
Yeah, that's right.
This prospect giving us a word on top. Man, I like him.
I expect to go into a service.
I like it.
Well, what part of that journey, though, if you had to say, because I'm sure there are several parts of it, but what's a part of it where you can look back now and say, man, if I hadn't gone through that, this wouldn't have been possible? And, you know, like, break it down for us. Make it tangible for us.
Right. A lot of people would probably expect for me to say probably the junior college route or that little chapter of my life in junior college. But it was really that section, that part of me at Georgia, because in junior college, I rose to be recognized as the best player in the junior college level, you know, at that time. But at Georgia, you know, I kind of just, you know, fell, you know, in kind of the rotation and stuff like that. So I went from the highs to kind of not the lows, but, you know, not where I wanted to be and not where I expected to be. So it's just kind of getting through that, you know, battling through that and understanding, you know, who I am as a man and as a person and just knowing that as long as I just keep living right off the field and glorifying God in every way that I can, he'll handle the rest for me. So just growing in my faith in myself and God.
You know, I know I've seen what you said, that you knew what the perception would be transferring from Georgia and excelling at Florida State. And some people were going to twist that into, well, he couldn't cut it at Georgia, or would he have been as good in the SEC? Have evaluators and team that you talk to, have they actually done that? Have they actually tried to turn that into a negative that you, instead of that, you try to take control of your career? Okay, good. So you haven't really gotten any kind of criticism from people that matter about moving on to Florida State. Okay, that's good.
Not at all, man. It's funny, you see, you know, the fans or whoever, they're speculating, you know, coming from all different angles with my journey and trying to pull negatives from it. And it's funny, it's quite the opposite, especially with NFL personnel. You know, they talk about how much a positive it is for me, my journey is. It's funny that, you know, to some people it's got its negatives, but like you said, to the people who matter, it's definitely all positive. So I'm very thankful, like I said, to be on the journey that I was on.
Well, what are these NFL teams saying? Because for me, I'd be like, this is a dude that's been through some adversity. You know, right. This is a dude that's like, when things don't, you know, aren't going well, knows how to respond or is hungry. What are they saying that they like about your path to the draft?
I mean, just being able to get to a new place and adapt right away and get along with the guys in the locker room, and not just get along, earn a leadership role, because I've done that every single place I've been to. Just showing how much I love the game through staying resilient through my journey. So my love for the game, you know, how well I'm able to adapt, and not to mention that I can take over a stage at every level that I've played at. So and there's more than that, you know, I'm just kind of on the spot, but, you know, when they talk to me and I talk to these head coaches and GMs, you know, they can't get enough of my story. And I mean that in the most humble way possible, because, you know, you got guys that come from only winning situations in terms of their football careers, and then they get to the next level and meet some adversity, and then boom, out of the league in 1 or 2 years, right? That's not the case with me. God willing, I stay healthy. You know, I'll be on the right track and I'll be doing good for a while.
You know, Jermaine, I got to tell you, this process, just knowing me, it would drive me crazy. Just every day, there's another mock draft. Some people have 4.0 mock draft, 5.0. This guy's rising. This guy's falling. You're rising. How are you managing it? Do you go to the sites every day and see what people are saying? How are you dealing with all this information?
I got a 2-year-old German Shepherd, man. I go outside. I take him for a walk. You know, I enjoy life. Like I said, I'm growing in my faith. Everything I can control, I control to the best of my ability. And everything I can, I put into God's hands. And that includes where I'm going and you know, what pick I'm picked at. So, I mean, I just control what I can control and enjoy life.
Well, okay, let's get into some of your other hobbies other than your German Shepherd. Because, I mean, behind you, you got this incredible painting, and then you got this guitar. Like, are you nice with that guitar? Are you an artist on the side? Like, is that you? That's all you right there?
Hey, I'm not the best with it yet. I'm not the best with it yet, but I would surprise a few people for sure. That's one of my biggest hobbies right now. I play it hours at a time each day while I can, right? I got some free time on my hands, but definitely playing that thing. I've always had an interest in music, but I'm, like I said, main thing's football, but definitely like music. Like I said, I got my dog, anything outdoors, fishing, hiking, whatever. I like to be outside in God's creation. I'm a pretty down-to-earth guy, man, but when I put that helmet on, it is a different story.
I heard that.
Well, listen, hey, we've never had, what do they have, those tiny concerts on NPR sometimes? We've never had one on Peacock here, A Brother from Another. Like, if you wanted to, you know, just perform right now for, like, 8 to 10 minutes, go ahead and do it. And if you don't want to do that, you can tell us who are some of your influences when you play.
I can guess
your influences.
I mean, we're talking about somebody from Eden Prairie, Minnesota. I know you a Prince guy.
Come on.
You must be a Prince guy.
Hey, he was 5 minutes from my house, man. 5 minutes down the road, for sure. For sure. But now I'm about to play something for y'all. I'll be right. No, I'm playing.
Oh, come on, don't do that.
I was like, yeah. Come on. Let's get it.
I was getting hyped. I was getting ready.
Nah, I'll just play. Maybe in a year or something when I'm a little better.
The dog's getting excited. What's your dog's name?
Apollo.
Nice. Apollo's getting excited. He thought you were about to get some guitar play or something.
He's probably is there, more excited
than anything. And Jermaine, is there a place that you want to play, or have you envisioned yourself? Because I see all these places, you know, Jacksonville at the top, a couple of New York teams in the top 10. Have you taken the time to say, you know what, that might be cool to play there?
Yeah, I mean, really, just all the places. I try not to get too wrapped up in it because any place I go, I got to play football, right? And not just play it at a high level. Because not only do other people have high expectations if I'm picked that high, but I also always have high expectations of myself. So, you know, I try not to worry about that kind of stuff. I just know wherever I go, we got rookie mini camp coming up, you know, all the other camps. So I got to come there in shape and I got to make something happen.
We're going to let you go in a minute. I'll ask you this, man. What are your plans for Vegas in terms of just your family? Who all going to be there? You know, what you wearing? Just the draft experience. You've taken a long road to get to this point. Right. What's your draft experience going to be like for you? Your name will get called early. And also, what do you expect your emotions are going to be given everything you've been through to get to this point?
Man, I'll hit on the emotions last, but I mean, I'm bringing my whole family, mom, dad, my mom's husband, my dad's wife, my stepmom, stepfather, all my siblings, my grandma, some childhood friends that always been there for me. So I mean, it's gonna be a movie down there, and I will be stepping. I will have that on. I will have it on. So,
oh, word. You know,
yeah, I'll be looking good.
All right.
My suits just arrived today, so they look good. It'll be good, great experience. And then my emotions, I know, you know, as everyone else is starting to find out, my journey was not only long, but definitely taxing and mentally, physically, as much as it can be. So, I mean, I know it's all going to come flowing out then, because I've always been a so what now what guy, you know, stick and move, what we got next to knock this down, get to obtain the goal. But, you know, now pretty soon the goal is going to be obtained. So, you know, once it all flushes back, I don't know. I might ugly cry on TV, but it is what it is.
Go ahead. Let it out.
Hey, man.
It's
you
healthy.
Earned it,
Let
brother.
It out.
You earned yeah. it. Thank you for taking the time. This dude, he can rush the pass. He can set the edge. He can play the guitar. He can give you a word. This is a complete player yeah. right here. Jermaine Johnson II, man. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jermaine.
Thank y'all.
We'll see you out in Vegas.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Dude, we are batting 1,000 with these prospect interviews. I mean, I want them all to come with me. I want them all on my squad.
Yeah.
Edge rushers, just narrow down to edge rushers. Okay. Kayvon Thibodeau
edge rushers.
Or Jermaine Johnson? Who'd you enjoy more?
Wow.
I can't call it, bro.
I can't call it either. I want to draft them both.
Man.
Right? What was that one year? Didn't the Colts have like 1-2 or 2-3?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
Quentin Coriat and Steve Entman? Yeah.
But anyway. I want
that's
both of
them.
That's
what it was, right? Yeah,
I'm
going to
draft them both.
I got
that was great,
you.
Man. I'm getting
hey,
excited.
That's a great
I'm
appetizer
excited
for next week in Vegas. Have
All
a good
right,
weekend.
Man. Enjoy your weekend.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.